the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and here's something you may recognize from times gone past.
We're very, you've heard about the controversies within the bill, the process about the bill, one of the items. But I don't know if you have heard that it is a legislation for the future, not just about health care for America, but about a healthier America, where preventive care is not something that you have to pay a deductible for or out of pocket. That prevention is about diet, not diabetes. It's going to be very, very exciting. But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it away from the fog of the controversy.
Well, here we are, Jim. We are in the future, almost a decade out from the fog of the controversy, and things have indeed become very, very clear to us. We have seen what's in the bill, and it's pretty bad.
Unfortunately, it's gone from bad to worse, as the recent announcement by the Department of Health and Human Services. The problem is that the press is keeping a lid on this, John. And what voters or many individuals shopping for health insurance on the exchanges next year could face an average sticker shock of a 25% increase. And by the way, that came from the Department of Health and Human Services, because some are saying, oh, this is just, you know, talk radio and other people coming up with these prices. I'll read you some of the premiums increases by states now, because they've had to file for their increases. And I think we mentioned a while back when we were doing a show on healthcare that Florida's increase was 14%. Believe it or not, folks, there's a couple states. One state has a premium increase of 116%. We'll get into that in just a moment. But John, healthcare costs are going up double digits for most Americans. I don't care if you have a private plan, if you are on Medicare, 30% of you on Medicare will see your healthcare premiums go up 22 to 23%. Next year. And if you are a individual that does not have health insurance and you do go on the government health exchanges, those average rates, and this is by the Department of Health and Human Services, will go up 25%.
All right. Well, why don't we start with Medicare? That's one program. Now, as far as exchanges, the states have different costs entailed on that, and it varies from state to state. But let's start with the Medicare issue.
That's probably the easiest one. There's two parts to Medicare pricing, and it's based on the amount of income that you have. Now, there is a law that has been put in place. It's called the Hold Harmless Clause, which basically says for most Americans that are on Medicare, they cannot increase your health care premiums for Medicare any more than your increases for your Social Security. So that means it's got to be even. If they increase your Social Security 3%, then they are allowed to increase your Medicare. However, when George W. Bush passed the drug prescription or Part D of Medicare, they went to a tiered pricing on Medicare premiums based on your income. So if you earn more than $85,000 a year, next year, your deductibles and your premiums are going to go up anywhere from 22 to 23%, because those 30% that are not in that whole harmless area, these are the people that are going to face and pay for the full brunt of Medicare costs going up, because they can't pass by law under that 70% level. So it depends on what tier your income falls in that will determine what your total Medicare pricing will be. But for 30% of you on Medicare next year, your premiums are going to go up 22 to 23%. And I hate to say, they're going to start going up double digit, because they're also going to be going up in 2018 as well.
Now, this is one of the things that you thump here on the program quite a bit, Jim, and that is for people who are in retirement, that their medical expenses will probably approach about $250,000 over the time of their retirement until the time they die. And so this is a very important expense.
And that assumes if you're retired, neither one of you gets into a long-term care facility, which can cost you $70,000, $80,000 a year. But anyway, for 70% of you that are on Medicare, your healthcare costs are probably only going to go up a couple percent in 2017. They'll be going up more in 2018. But the other 30% of you that are making over $85,000 a year, well, I hate to tell you, but your premiums are going to be going up 22 to 23%.
Let's talk about the brouhaha this week, although it really hasn't been thrummed as much by the media. I've been surprised by that. When the Department of Health and Human Services said the average premium for Obamacare was going to go up 25%.
And John, that's the average. Remember, there's 50 states. Now, there's 12 states that will have either high single digits, but the other 38 states in this country will face premiums as high as 116% to an average of 30 to 40% next year. So you can imagine why they want to bury this in the news right just before an election. I mean, talk about a bombshell to release 2 weeks just before a presidential election, but the true facts about Obamacare are finally coming out. And remember, that's just the average, depending on what state, and we'll get to those in just a minute. Those costs can be considerably higher.
You know, earlier in the week, Jim, I talked to Dr. Melro Matthews at the Institute for Policy Innovation in Texas, and I wanted him to explain to people exactly why these premiums are going up. Here was our conversation. Why are they doing that? Let's explain to people what kind of a fix Obamacare has put insurance companies in.
Well, to say you can't blame them, let's remember the insurance industry was generally on board with this.
So they own it.
They own it. But what happened is they were willing to accept things they had always said would essentially destroy a market. And that's exactly what's happened. Two things on there. Number one, Obamacare imposes a lot more things, a lot more coverage on things that insurance must cover. And the president says, you're getting all this free preventive care. It's not free, Mr. President. We're having to pay for it in higher premiums. And so there's that aspect of it. But the real problem is it's not the group market that's having some problems. It's not Medicare and Medicaid. They're having some problems. It's the individual market where individuals go out and buy their own health insurance that's imploding because they said insurers have to accept anybody who applies. That encourages people to wait until they have a medical condition to move into the system. And that means younger, healthy people stay out of the market exactly as we predicted. And when they stay out, the pool is smaller, sticker, and premiums go up. It's called the death spiral in health insurance. It's happening right now. Under normal insurance, and that's any kind of insurance, auto insurance, life insurance, when you go to the insurance company, they assess the risk you bring to the pool, and they put a premium on that. So under normal circumstances, younger, healthy people had really low health insurance premiums, and older people had higher premiums because they tend to have more medical conditions. What Obamacare did was said, we don't like that. That's discriminatory. Let's have everybody pay the same price. Now, they adjusted that a little bit, so it's called what we call modified community rating rather than pure community rating. But what happened was younger, healthy people are paying more so that older people can pay less. So young, healthy people are subsidizing older people who tend to be higher income. And as a result, the premiums for young, healthy people tend to be even much higher than they would be in a normal market.
And so what the young people are doing, Jim, is they're just spinning the roulette wheel and saying, well, I'm young. The odds are I'm not going to need it. Why should I buy it? And so they were the ones that were anticipated during this sort of almost Ponzi scheme of trying to support the people who needed it, but they're not buying into it. You know, so.
And we'll get to young people here, but healthcare represents about 1/7 of the U.S. economy. The government, anytime it interferes with things, it causes prices to rise because they tell you there's a bunch of free stuff. Folks, anytime the government says there's free stuff, there is no such thing as free stuff. It just doesn't exist. It's going to be reflected somewhere in the form of higher taxes. We already got that. We've got the healthcare tax. We got higher taxes on dividends and all investment income. We have an extra Medicare tax that went into place. So we got that. But the insurance companies, like anybody else, if their costs go up, and one of the things that happened to the insurance companies when they went along with this is they were going on government statistics. And you remember all the projections that were made when Obamacare was first come in, you know, people were going to flood for all this great health care coverage. Well, it turned out they never could get these people to take on an insurance policy because, number one, it was costly. I mean, face it, folks, if you're a young person, are you going to want to be spending a couple hundred dollars a month for a policy that has a $5,000 deductible, meaning that you don't get paid from your insurance company on anything unless you have a major illness? And this is one of the issues that has happened is the only young people that are signing on to the plan or they get into an accident, they get into a serious medical problem, then they sign on. Once the issue is taken care of, then they drop the policy. So this is one of the reasons we spend so much time here on the program emphasizing everything from diet to good, healthy lifestyles, because you're going to need it, because medical costs are going to be going up and up and up each year. Unless this thing implodes and they start from scratch, we'll talk about some alternatives coming up here. But what's worse is, John, it's not just the fact that the premiums are going up. It's as these costs go up, insurance companies are losing billions and billions of dollars. And so what is happening is all of these major insurance companies are pulling off the exchanges. Unfortunately, when they do that, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of current insured people may lose their insurance coverage as more insurance companies drop out of the exchanges. And we're in that sign-up period that ends at the end of the year that you have to sign up just like Medicare for to get on these exchanges. There is now some kind of fix that they're talking about, John, because so many people are losing their policies as a result of insurance companies pulling out of a market. They may have to extend that enrollment period because, let's say you enrolled on the exchange, you have a policy, and you just got a notice from your insurance saying, sorry, guess what? By X date, when your policy comes due, we're pulling out, and you will no longer have coverage. So that's why if you are on one of the health exchanges and you've gotten notice, you better sign up, just like if you're enrolling for Medicare, sign up in that enrollment period, because they're talking about an extended period of time. But until you enroll in another plan, you may be without coverage, and that's going to be really important if you have a serious illness. So you don't want to catch yourself being caught in the middle where you don't have any coverage. And the other thing is, as more of these insurance companies pull out of a market, what that does, it leaves fewer and fewer, if not smaller companies left to cover the cost. And these small companies can't afford to bear the burden of that cost. So that's why they're raising their premiums. And that's why when we get into some of the states here, I want to read some of these increases, because when I tell you this, folks, it's going to be shocking, literally shocking. And here's another story that's being buried by the government media right now. They're really barely getting a brief mention of this because they don't want people to know this ahead of an election.
And the key here, Jim, is the fact that it's the giants that are pulling out. You know, what I first anticipated when they put this in 8 years ago was that, okay, we're going to see some shuffling, reshuffling, and merging as the smaller companies can't afford it. But these are the larger companies that are pulling out that are much better capitalized. If they can't deal with it, what's everybody else going to do?
The only way they'll be able to survive is put in for major cost increases. And folks, when I read you some of the cost increases, depending on which state you're in, you are going to be shocked, because basically you take the big insurers, United Healthcare, Humana, Aetna are withdrawing from the exchanges. So you're going to see more and more scores of individuals and families that will get notices informing them their policies are going to be discontinued. And also premiums are also rising, because as more insurance companies, as I mentioned, pull out, at least fewer companies. I mean, you take Aetna, just announced they are pulling out of 70% of the county exchanges. They're involved in 70%. So imagine if the big guys are pulling out, what's going to happen to the little guys?
But, you know, President Obama this week, in the process of the campaign trail campaigning for Mrs. Clinton, was telling everybody not to believe the reports that the prices are going up. This is just people on the right who were saying that. But, well, funny that, once again, these figures came from his own Department of Health and Human Services. So this would seem to be one more lie on the trail of lies that Obamacare has been built on.
If you think 25%, now remember that 25% is the average of all 50 states, but if you're in Arizona, get ready for sticker shock. Your Obamacare premiums are going up 116% next year. Oklahoma, 69%. Tennessee, 63%. Minnesota, 59%. Alabama, 58%. Pennsylvania, 53%. Nebraska, 51%. Montana, 44%. Illinois, 43%. Kansas, 42%. North Carolina, 40%. South Dakota, 39%. Hawaii, 35%. West Virginia, 32%. South Carolina, 29%. New Mexico, 29%. Arkansas, 29%. Oregon, 27%. The others are in the low 20s. The best state to live in next year is actually Indiana. I don't know what they're doing there, but their premiums are actually going down 3%. Maine's premiums are going down 2%. And New Hampshire is going up 2%. Ohio's going up 2%. And New Jersey. So there are some states, two states, are actually lowering their premiums. And you've got, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4 here that are under 6% or more. But everything else, John, out of those 50 states, 38 states are raising those premiums double digits. I mean, that is a lot of money for people. And you can understand why a lot of young people are saying, I don't want to pay those kind of premiums. I don't have that kind of money. I mean, by the time you take where they spend their money, there isn't very much left over. And problem is, once again, because more and more of these insurance companies are seeing this self-perpetuating feedback loop, which we'll talk about here, more and more companies are expected to pull out of the exchanges next year. So the pool of insurance companies is shrinking. The pool of individuals involved in the program is shrinking. And those who are signing up are mainly sick. The healthy people don't want it. If you're young and you're healthy, you're saying, hey, you know, I'm invincible. I'm immortal. What do I need health insurance coverage? And that's another problem that they're having on these exchanges. They can't get the young people to enroll because the young people are smart enough to do the math and figure this out. This doesn't add up.
Mr. Trump wants to repeal it. Mr. Obama is saying, don't believe all the people telling you things are wrong. Mrs. Clinton is saying things are wrong, but we don't need to repeal it. We just need to fix a few things here. My real question is, you know, if something was never designed to fly in the first place, you can tinker around all you want with it. It's still not going to get off the ground and stay in the air.
Well, the problem is how insurance premiums are priced, and they're done on actuarial assumptions. So let's assume that an insurance company looks at an insurance pool of 100 people. Statistically, they know that they have screening devices. You know, when you apply for insurance, same thing when you apply for auto insurance or life insurance, you're going to go through a healthcare questionnaire. They're going to ask you things. Do you have high blood pressure? Have you had problems? Have you had cancer? Do you have any serious diseases? And that way the company can say, well, if you have these problems, we're going to have to charge you more because the risk to us to insure you is much greater because you're more likely to be sick. And if you're sick, we're going to spend a ton of money. So that's the way a free market works. The problem is Obamacare came in and said, you know what, Mr. Insurance Company, you can't charge. You have to take anybody, and you can't charge a person that's sick any more than you can charge a person that's healthy. And so what happens is your probabilities and your statistics get all distorted because you need a healthy pool of insured people in the pool as well as the sick people. But when you can't estimate what the probabilities are, the problem is they went with government statistics that had all these rosy scenarios that all these people were going to sign up, including a lot of young people. Well, guess what? The healthy people and the young people never signed up. So what happens is every single year that Obamacare has gone into place, more and more sick people were the ones signing up for the policy. So basically the insurance pool in this case got worse and worse. And what happens is the insurance companies ended up having to pay all these medical expenses for all these sick people. So they're losing money. I mean, literally billions of dollars. And they're pulling out of these markets because they're saying, you know what? We have all these sick people. We can't afford to stay in this market because we'll be bankrupt. We'll be out of business. So what has happened is the people that are mainly on the system right now are the older and sicker people are the ones that are signing up. The healthier people are pulling out. Because, you know, you take a look at the average young person getting out of college, getting their first job. You know, you take gas for your car, beer on weekends, dinner out on Friday and Saturday night. It's just not worth it to spend $2,000 or $3,000 a year or more for a health insurance policy that you're not going to collect on unless, you know, you have a major illness that's over $5,000. So guess what you get? The only ones that are really signing up are the ones that are very sick. And that's why basically, these insurance companies are pulling out of these markets because they're losing literally a fortune in money.
I don't know. I've believed all along that they knew this was going to happen, that the goal was a single-payer healthcare system, because if government can take it over, then it can offset these losses with taxpayer money. That's the thought. Whereas private insurance companies have to operate at a profit. You know?
Absolutely.
So I still think that's going to be proposed at some point or another. They're going to come rushing in and saying, see, it no work good. It's broken. And we need to fix it. And we'll do that with a single payer healthcare system. It'll run better now that we've cleaned up this whole mess. I think that's going to be the ultimate proposal.
That's ultimately where it's going, because the whole system is flawed from its very beginning in the way it's structured and designed. Because what has happened in the last 3 years, there was an insurance conference where the head of Aetna said, basically, the insurance population keeps getting sicker, sicker, and sicker. And what that means is insurance companies are then forced to raise the insurance rates even higher. And it becomes a self-feeding negative feedback loop. And the higher those premiums go, the fewer the young people are going to sign up for this. So they need, according to Health and Human Services, they need 28.5 million young, healthy people to join. You know, it's kind of like Social Security, where you have three workers supporting every one worker that's retired. They need three or four healthy people to support every one person that's sick. The problem is the young people are smart enough. They do the math. And they go, you know what? It's not worth it. So they're not going to get this 30 million or 40 million. In other words, they need three times the amount of young, healthy people to sign up in terms of every one sick person that they have in the policy. It's just not going to happen. So what's going to happen, John, each year is more and more sick people come into the program. The insurance companies are going to have to keep raising those rates higher and higher and higher in the whole system is going to basically collapse. And there's three possible outcomes that they're talking about, depending on which political party you're talking to. One is collapse. If nothing is done, it's going to collapse of its own weight. It's unsustainable, and it's proving these double-digit price increases. And you know what's going to happen when people start seeing their premiums go up 25% a year? You know what's going to happen in the midterm congressional elections. The second proposal, which is Hillary's proposal, is, hey, we'll keep this, but we'll slap a few Band-Aids. Well, those Band-Aids are going to cost a lot of money, because how are you going to keep an insurance company in a pool when essentially they're losing billions of dollars? Or three, there's going to be a new system. But either one of those three, it's coming, because this is not sustainable, folks. This will not go on to 2018 next year when millions of people lose their insurance policies and face, on average, 25% premium increases. And that goes on year for year. You can imagine what it's going to cost. And it just will not be sustainable.
Well, I would recommend that people vote this year and recall that they lied to us before. So be careful of anything that's going to happen now. I've gotten really sardonic about this, Jim, because I remember the amount of abuse that we took when we began to raise objections to this back in 2008. Remember that? And all of this stuff was poo-pooed and nonsense and the whole bit. And it's all turned out to be true. So I'm thinking, well, we need to stick it where it's due here. But all of that aside, and this is one of those few cases, by the way, in media where you get to have a really solid, I told you so. And it's pretty hard to dodge. That doesn't happen very often in political coverage, but every so often it does. Okay. But we're going to have to deal with this anyway. No matter what happens in healthcare, we as individuals are going to have to take care of our healthcare in retirement and plan for it. Now, let's do our case study. As with all of our case studies, they're based on real life, except the names of the participants, the people, have been changed to protect their privacy. And as with all our case studies, we do have slides that illustrate the things we are discussing on the website that run along with the conversation. So frame it for us this week, Jim.
This week, we have the case of Milton and Annie White. Milton is age 67. Annie is age 59. Milton just recently retired. Annie wants to retire at the end of this year. Based on life expectancy and family history, Milton is expected to live to age 84. Annie, given her life expectancy and her family, 91. Risk tolerance for both of them were probably moderately conservative. Investment objective is income with capital preservation. Milton worked in the construction industry. He was forced into retirement this year due to health and heart concerns. He was a general contractor, but due to back issues, he can no longer continue to work his normal job. He's also concerned about maintaining the same standard of living. You know, when you basically have to begin retirement earlier than you expected, it's, you know, can I maintain this kind of lifestyle when I'm no longer working? He's also concerned about the timing of the retirement because he's seen a slowdown at work and is scared of retiring right before a recession, which we could be facing next year. Annie is an accountant. She works for a small company. She is wanting to retire to spend more time with her husband and help take care of him as he recovers from back surgery. She is nervous about being able to afford their current lifestyle, but she's excited at the prospect of retirement and also looks forward to the next adventure. So some of the things that they were concerned about in their plan was protecting their nest egg, healthcare planning, obviously, for health reasons, not outliving their assets, and once again, maintaining that standard of living, which is getting more and more difficult for many individuals. Their essential budget was a little over $58,000 a year. Discretionary spending, roughly about $34,000. That would be $92,000. Annie's full-time salary was $45,000. Social Security would be $30,000, leaving a shortfall of about $17,000. Now, looking at how their retirement budget would change, discretionary spending would go down roughly by $3,000 a year. So total would be roughly close to $90,000. Annie would continue to work part-time because of the age difference. They're going to need to. Social Security would be $30,000. They would have a $39,000 shortfall if she worked part-time. Now, the good news is they were savers throughout most of their career. Their residence was basically $225,000. Milton's retirement assets were $450,000. Annie's retirement, because she had matching benefits at her employer, was $1,610,000, and they had roughly about $125,000 in cash, total investment assets of $2.3 million, and a net worth of about $2.5. Now, some of the challenges that we were facing here was managing the increased cost of healthcare, and that's what we've been talking about on this show. And, you know, it's not just going to be Annie and Milton anymore. It's going to be all of us, given the precarious nature of what's happened to our healthcare system these last 3 or 4 years. Also managing the risk from the market, because, you know, we're starting an investment plan coming towards the end of a bull market rather than the beginning of a bull market. And obviously, you don't want to start your investment plan when you see and go through a bear market like we did in 2000, 2002, or in 2007 to 2009, where the markets lost 45 to 50% of their value. So they had some risk concerns. They were also concerned about longevity and ensuring that they don't outlive their assets. And of course, getting their estate plan in proper order. Milton's Social Security would be $30,000. Annie's part-time income would be $20,000. We did a fixed income and dividend plan, basically a balanced fund with a yield of 3.1%. That was about $14,000 a year. Annie's retirement plan, we did a short-term bond ladder of 2.5%. She was more risk-averse. That was about $32,000. And of course, she had the larger portfolio. And then roughly value stocks and dividend payers with a yield of 3.4. That was roughly $11,500. And then some fixed income on the personal side at 3%. Total investment income, $61,000. Total income, $111,000, less budget of $92,000, that left a surplus of roughly $19,000. That was the thing that we had to tell them, is that you needed something in your portfolio that had to increase over time, in this case, dividend stocks, or you were going to have to increase your savings to have more assets because of life expectancy. And especially with Annie, number one, she was younger by 8 years, and number two, her life expectancy was much greater given the longevity in family history. So instead of fully retiring, what we recommended, Annie would continue to work on a part-time basis, primarily from home. This will allow Annie to still be covered by her employer's health care plan. Milton will continue to be covered by his Medicare Advantage plan. Then, also protecting the nest egg, we reallocated investments into a much more conservative portfolio with the allocation by focusing on income-oriented investments. And they wouldn't need to draw as much from their portfolio because Annie would still be working part-time until 65 when she would be eligible for Medicare. And then at age 66, she would be eligible for her Social Security, which would be additional income. And in terms of outliving assets, reduce near-term stock positions over time as the market corrects. Stock positions will increase in more favorable markets. So in this case, John, we were handling medical. Milton was already on a Medicare Advantage plan. And to cover Annie, we recommended as long as she maintained a part-time employment, she would have medical coverage with her existing employer.
Well, we have just a couple of more weeks to go here in silly season, and the elections will be over. Maybe some of the debate will flutter down, but obviously it's not going to do for the changes that are going to be needed in Obamacare. Remember, if you're doing your retirement planning, costs of medical expenses are going up, and you need to take them into account because they're going to be a major part of your retirement planning, depending on where you are in what exchanges, etc. The rates are going to go up to what, high single digits, in some cases to double digits. And so all of this, whether it's Medicare or the Obamacare exchanges, things are changing because the current system we have is economically unsustainable. And you really need to apprehend that so that regardless of what the politicos do, you can make plans for your own retirement.
So on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you once again for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.